Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 24th of May, Anno Domini 2014. And you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to do something a little unusual today. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. But before we do that...
We did miss you.
Thank you. I missed you guys, too. I actually listened. I was actually off bringing my daughter home from college, so I was 4 days on the road. My knees are still feeling it. Cheese and crackers. Driving my wife's car, she's got a short footwell in her car. Nick. So my knees were all scrunched up. And then the space is narrow, so the sides of both knees are bruised.
Nick?
Yeah.
It's called getting older.
Yeah, I don't deny that in the least.
Older.
I do not deny that in the least. But we did, and I listened to you guys. It was great. It was great, so well, that was fine.
We had fun.
Yeah, you did. I enjoyed listening. But now I'm back, and I'm enjoying this, too. But before we do that, let me take just a moment on this Saturday before Memorial Day. Let us all take just a moment to remember those of among us who served,
yep.
And in particular, those who gave their lives for our freedom. So,
yeah. More so the ones that aren't here to celebrate.
Yep.
You know.
Yep. So thank you all, and there you have it. And on a happier note, tomorrow's towel day.
Yep. Everyone know where your towel is.
And Douglas Adams.
And all this weekend is the New York Power Rocket Festival down at the Geneseo Airport, put on by the Monroe Astronomical Rocket Society, MARS.
MARS.
We'll be going down tomorrow and flying.
Where is that at?
It's the Geneseo Airport, where they do the air show, too.
Yeah.
Hmm.
All right, so many of you know about Google Now, where you can swipe your phone, or sometimes you don't even have to swipe your phone, and you can say, okay, Google, and you can immediately do a voice search from there. Well, if you wanted to enjoy hands-free Google searching from your desktop, your only option was to install an extension or become an early tester. The downside was that you'd have to accept some additional bugs, which might come your way. No more. Google has rolled out a Chrome update that integrates the company's now iconic OK Google command directly into the latest version of its browser and in Chrome OS. As long as you're based in the U.S. or have Chrome set to U.S. English, anytime you visit the Google homepage or open a new tab, you can quickly say or loudly shout, the choice is yours, OK Google to perform a search, ask a question, or schedule a reminder.
And everyone that has this installed on their computer, now their computer just tried to do something.
That's exactly right. I actually did that the other day. I was with a friend actually in a restaurant, and we both had our computers open, and I said, hey, you know you can do OK Google now, and both machines went bing.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't go bing.
Because that would be Microsoft. What is the noise of a Google?
Yeah. Right.
Well, there's a Google whack.
I
guess that's a whack.
That's more a whack than a bang of some sort.
Yeah.
As long as you fulfill the geographic requirements or are happy to tinker with Chrome's language settings, you should be able to test those voice commands seconds after you update. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is OK Google voice search now available in Chrome? And your choices are great. You know how much I hate to type. I've been so envious of my Android friends. Looking forward to exploring it. If it's not Siri, it's crap. And I have no idea what this even means. So far, we have... yeah, ding. That's the wrong ding as well. We have 26 votes. And looking forward to exploring it is number one. Actually tied with I have no idea what this even means as number two. But of course, I know you will have more to say about this subject, those of you who have any idea what we're talking about. So head for the forums. If you look down the right-hand column, you'll see fascinating stuff. The first choice is the forums. if you go there, the second set is the poll discussion. Excuse me, beg your pardon. I had coffee just a minute ago. The poll discussion, and the top one on that is OK Google Voice Search, now available in Chrome. And of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. I've been using OK Google for the longest time, and I really, really like it. There is that moment where everybody looks at you like you show off, but it works great. And on your phone in particular, and on your tablet, you really don't want to have to do all that typing.
Right.
You can just talk to it. That's one of the joys of something like Siri as well, the ability to just speak what you want to say and you're done. I use that constantly in text messaging. I use it for everything. And being able to do voice searches and all that stuff. It's very, very cool. It's very, very cool.
But it is fun to get a bunch of people in the same room and see whose phone answers. Same thing that Siri has done. Yeah, that was a big, big game for a while. And you, when you hear the Siri ding, you try to yell out, call home or do something.
Yeah, we used to see that all the time in class.
Now ding. We can do it at Google.
Call mom. Call home.
Yep. So now what was needed, you can get two phones talking to each other.
Right. Yeah. So that's been available for the Android community for quite a while. But now pretty much anybody using Chrome can do it. It's a pretty cool little feature. And I find that I actually use it more than I do typing stuff.
In fact, I did three.
We done blowed it up again.
This morning, three or four things. I had to remember to do today, so I asked Siri, remind me to, I have to get milk after the show. And remind me to get motors. I have to get rocket motors after the show so I can fly tomorrow.
That's exactly what you
so
have
I had
to
all these
do.
Things that have to remind me. And you ask Siri. In fact, one was neat. I asked Siri to remind me to call my mom, and it said, do you want to make this person your mom? And it's, yeah, that is. Thank you.
Yeah, it is
so now, so now it associated mom with a contact record, and so call your mom brings the phone number up.
Right.
Yeah.
I did that with Elaine and Amelia.
Yep.
My father-in-law put dad.
Relationship status.
I've got one that's that idiot.
What was that TV show? It was a TV show where this woman, a lawyer show, Fairly Legal, her mother-in-law, it was all Wizard of Oz characters. Her mother-in-law was the Wicked Witch. Her ex-husband was the Cowardly Lion, and so all the people she knew were characters and theme songs from Wizard of Oz.
Nice. All right. To the phones. Our first caller is Mike from Altoona, PA. Welcome, Mike. Do you know Jason?
I used to know a lot of people in Rochester. I'm not sure anymore.
Oh, no. Jason's in Altoona,
from
PA.
Altoona?
Yep.
Yeah. You know, everybody in Altoona knows each other, right?
Oh, yeah, I found that out when I moved here 25 years ago. That happens in a hurry.
It does, I'm sure it does. What can we do for you, Mike?
Hey, the question I have concerns email. Now, about a week ago, I tried to send an email, and I'm using Outlook 7, and I got an error indication that says your multiple RBSs, which I found out meant that I'm blackballed from email because they said I was sending spam. Which, of course, I don't do. And also, I was out of town for months, and I didn't send anything from this IP address. So I'm curious as how something like that could have happened, and what's my best way of fixing it. Now, I called my service provider, and they told me to get onto these people called MX Toolbox, and I have to ask to be released from the blacklist. Which they finally did, but it took about 5 days. I'm wondering if there's a way for me to, say, change my IP address in the meantime so I could expedite, being taken off that blacklist.
Who is your internet service provider? Who do you get your mail through?
It's Atlantic Broadband.
Okay.
And also internet from them?
Yes, and what they stated, and I checked on it online, is they said my IP address is what they call dynamic, that it can change.
Right. Every time you log into your internet service, but basically whenever you when you reboot your internet router, it asks the company for a new IP address. And the way the system works is it gets the same address it had last time unless someone else is already using it. So you can't change your address. They have to.
Yeah, well, that's the story I got from them is they can't. I don't know if that's true or not.
They can,
I did look online, and there were some suggestions insofar as forcing it to change. I think they said type in at the command prompt ipconfig/release.
Well, that just changes at your computer. That has nothing to do with the internet.
Okay.
Right. Two things here.
Basically, you're saying I'm hosed. I'm at their mercy.
Two things here, Mike. When you were on the CBLs, the composite blacklist, were you there with your email address or with your IP address?
Well, that was going to be another question for you. I'm just new to this stuff. So, like, when I called Atlantic Broadband, they gave me an IP address which started at, like, a two-digit number and then a dot, like a 10.1 something or other. And if I get online and go to that website, what's my IP address? It had a completely different one.
Well, that's
right.
Yeah, the 10 dot is your private address of your computer, and that only matters inside your own house, inside your own network. The other address that you got from what is my IP address is your public address, and that's the address that your internet company gives you. And it's possible that someone else, because the addresses are dynamic, someone else had that address and was sending out spam. And now
that's
you have
what my my impression was, as Curly Joe would say, victim of circumstance.
Right.
When that
so
does
now
happen, there's really little
address.
I can do about it.
Right. If you turn off your cable, is it cable or DSL? Either way, turn off
It's cable, and I tried, as one website suggested, of turning off the cable modem overnight, resetting it, and that didn't do anything.
You may
had the same address.
Right, so you have
so
to ask your internet provider.
That long time I was out of town, that it just changed on me.
That's possible. And, listen, there's a couple of things you can do. One is your IP may just automatically drop off the blacklist, but that can take a couple of weeks. You can always submit a form, which is probably what you did at CBL. You can adjust, the easiest thing to do, honestly, is to change your mail provider.
Well, that wouldn't change the IP address.
Sure it would. It would change the address from which the mail is coming.
Nobody's in other words, you would say go to Gmail or somebody
else. Right. Now, you can create a Gmail address and only use it in emergencies, like when somebody else has sent spam and you got caught. But you could also just use Gmail, because the folks at Gmail have this issue regularly and they deal with it in minutes rather than days.
I couldn't. What I had to do was go directly to ABB's website and use their email at Atlantic Broadband, which worked, but it was, it's a hassle because you had to move the files to if you wanted to attach something in that.
Right. But you can always, of course, Gmail accounts are free, so you can go get one and just use it in an emergency, duplicate your list of your email list, your address book, and then say when you're sending something out, say look, for a couple of days it'll be from here. Now, if this is the first time it's happened, not a terrible big deal. But if it keeps happening, then there's somebody at your internet service provider who's sending out spam and not being stopped by the internet service provider, and this sort of thing might happen again and again and again. And so at some point, it's probably best to really use a different email address somewhere, like whether it's Google or it's, any one of a dozen other huge providers who face this issue all the time and deal with it in a more timely manner themselves before it ever really gets to you.
Yeah, that's the first time it's happened. And the people I talked to were helpful, that they just didn't seem, like they were really technical types.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Yep. Good luck. Got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 19 minutes after the hour. Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And we have Mark from Greece on the line. Welcome, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Peachy. How are you?
Good. I have a quick question for you. You guys are familiar with BlueStacks, correct?
Ish.
Yeah.
Sure.
I was using it on the computer for a while and decided to get rid of it. So I used Revo to uninstall it. And everything went okay. And then I noticed there was a leftover called Notification Center. And I went to uninstall that. And I get a little thing that comes up. It says, some programs require Notification Center to work properly. If you uninstall it, you will not be able to use those dependent programs. Now, the question I have for you, if you might know, is that pertaining to what was in the program, or has it attached itself to something else?
Notification Center is a feature of the operating system that applications use to notify you of things. So a little message can pop up on screen, and a lot of applications use that.
Right. This has the BlueStacks little logo, those multicolored squares that are stacked on each other. And when I go to information in Revo, it says it's from BlueStacks.
Right.
But I don't know, like I said, if it attached itself to something else.
It likely did not. There is a notification center, an actual program called Notification Center in Windows 8.1, but there isn't a program specifically called that in Windows.
Windows 7.
Right.
64-bit.
It certainly isn't hurting anything by being there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to get rid of it, I don't think there's a reason not to.
Right.
As the message is just warning you that some other program could be using this file.
Right.
And there, I don't think there's any way to know.
Yeah, the only thing I thought that maybe what happened is that this was a separate like install from BlueStacks, and that this would work with those programs, that those games that were in BlueStacks that I no longer have.
Right. Yeah, it came when you installed BlueStacks, and
right,
other programs could be using it too.
Okay. So probably a safe bet is probably just leave it alone.
Just leave it alone. It's certainly, like I said, it's not hurting anything.
Right.
It's a very small program.
Right.
And unless and until, particularly if Revo said you should hang on to this,
mm-hmm,
it's probably because something's attached to it.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good. Thank you.
There you go. Yeah, it is hard to tell. No program gets it all right, which is simply par for the course. But if generally speaking, if Revo leaves it, just leave it alone. It's probably attached to something. That's generally the way that works. All right. Before we go back to the phones, let me just say we're not on Hangouts today. I'm still trying to find the right connector and see if I can get something to happen. Here, our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dennis. What's up?
I have an executable program that has suddenly occurred in Task, or suddenly shown up in Task Manager. It's UNSECAPP.exe. I want to get rid of it. This is Windows 7. I haven't had it all the years that I've had Windows 7. I don't want it there now.
Okay, UNS is in Sam E?
E is in Edward. CAPP.
Okay. I don't know it offhand. And it's an .exe file?
Yes.
According to a Microsoft answer, it's used in the communication between computers and starts automatically with Windows Vista.
Yeah, I was reading that, but I didn't. I read a bunch of stuff, but it also could be a Trojan. I'm scanning right now with AVG, a full system scan. My scan isn't finished, but I really do want to get rid of it. How might one, do I just do a search and then find the executable file?
Well, that's always dangerous because it's probably going to, it's probably put something somewhere in the registry. In addition, if it is in fact, are you running Vista?
No.
So what the bad guys do is they'll use the same name as a real program.
What I would suggest you do is dance the full security tango.
Okay.
And it's especially an anti-malware program like Malware Bytes.
Malware Bytes.
I do have that. I didn't think I needed to do malware or the other one, but I guess I'll do everything.
Well, it may not be a virus. It may be malware.
Okay.
Right. And so if you do that, and it should get rid of it if it is, in fact, a non-real program.
Okay.
But, and the other thing is, if this suddenly showed up on your machine, you've never seen it before.
Right.
It is possible that you have gotten infected, and this is just a symptom that you're seeing, and the rest of it is hidden. So dancing the tango would help with all of that.
Okay, that's a good idea. I didn't think. I mean, I know you talk about that a lot, but it doesn't immediately come to mind. I guess you should keep saying it a
I'll
lot.
Keep saying
dance
it.
The security tango.
All right, the Security Tango at securitytango.com. Anytime you feel your machine is not running right, dance the tango.
It's great. All right,
thank you,
guys.
Thanks. I realize, and a lot of people ask this, and I don't have there's no shortcut. They say, you know, the tango takes so long to actually run. Well, the reality is that we've got big machines now, lots of hard drive, lots of RAM, and there are lots of Trojans out there, malware of all various types. So when you combine those things, it takes a long time to scan any individual file because there are so many bad programs out there. And then when you multiply that by the number of files, yes, it takes a while to do. Your other choice is not being safe. I hate to say it, but there it is. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gerd from Victor, New York. Welcome, Gerd. What's up?
Well, gentlemen, I have problems getting the FM signal sometimes, and I like to listen to your show on my Chromebook. And when I click on the Listen Live and then click here for Listen Live via high speed, I get a little thingy that says, this file is not supported. Visit your Chrome web store to find an app that can open this type file. And it is jazz901stream.m3u.
Right. Yeah. It's an MP3 stream file, and you need an MP3 streaming app for Chrome.
Well, there's two things that you can do. There is a, oh dear, I don't have it on this machine. Hold on a second.
You can always use the MP3 stream and not the M3U stream.
Right, that's the second thing I was going to say, which is the easier thing to do. If you say click here to listen on your smartphone.
Second thing I was going to say, which is the easier thing to do.
There you go, that works perfectly. And it is the same stream. This being, you know, I wouldn't necessarily, if I wanted to hear the full, beautiful range of some of the songs that are played during the week,
right?
I might not want to use that stream, but we're just voice.
I got it. Yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't want to screw around with that because I don't have one of those smartphones, and I thought, man, I don't want to, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, but that will do it. If you, I used to have an app.
Radio Player Live, several, we've looked at before.
That's it. Radio Player Live will do it.
Because that link I've been to.
There you go.
Radio Player Live.
It's in the Chrome Web Store.
Right.
It will let you listen to all kinds of streams, including the Jazz 90.1 stream.
Beautiful. And I am a member, and a lot of people that are listening should contribute also.
That's what we like to hear. Another unsolicited testimonial, ladies and gentlemen, from Gerd from Greece, New York. Thank you, Gerd.
Oh, Victor.
Oh, what did I say?
Greece.
No, yeah, Gerd from Victor. And Victor
Greece.
From Greece, and Mike from Altoona. We got it all. Thanks, Gerd.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Bye. And enjoy that Chromebook. You can do almost anything on a Chromebook. You just have to know what extension to use.
Yeah.
One trick that I have used time and time again, if you go to the store, the Chrome store, the Chrome web store, in the search box, just type M3U, and it will, and then hit enter, of course.
Hello.
And it will bring in some apps as well as some extensions. The Radio Player Live is the one I use for all kinds of things. It actually sits up in the bar next to the Omnibox, and it's all good. Yes?
I don't know who that was, but I heard them talking to a dog in the background, and I give you three chances to, and I politely say hello, and if you don't answer, I hang up.
That's how it has to be. We have to move on. It's a tough life, but there it is. I do have it installed. I just disabled it because I don't need it running on this machine at this moment. So Radio Player Live is pretty cool. You can listen to all kinds of stations. There are thousands of them available. And you can do all kinds of stuff with it.
Especially stations around the world, too. So you can listen to BBC News and see what the rest of the world thinks of us.
You're right. but it's pretty nice. It's pretty nice. And there are lots and lots of extensions. If you have not spent any time in the Chrome Web Store, you really should. A lot of the things that people complain about Chromebooks, I can't do this, I can't do that. You can. You just have to find the extension that does it for you.
Right.
You can edit video very nicely, by the way, on a Chromebook with a program called WeVideo. You can edit audio. You can do all the stuff that 90% of people do in Photoshop.
AutoCAD viewer.
You can do AutoCAD. Mm-hmm.
Edit, too.
For Pete's sake. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's an amazing number of things you can do on a Chromebook. You just have to look for the extensions or apps that will do that for you.
And they're there. I mean, it's just there, and designing it and, you know, configuring it the way you want it, and it'll work just fine.
Yeah, there are thousands upon thousands of them. Many more of them as you go along. Many of them now run offline. A lot of them are by Google. Most of them are free. Not all of them. Some of them are free with ads. You know, depending on what you're looking at, some are free with ads, and then you use something else to you pay to get rid of the ads, but they're all there. There's a lot of stuff there.
Talking about radio and that, you know, the one incident that happened this week, you know, that's the one thing about radio right now. And I was explaining to Kathy, you know, with the internet now, it's so easy to get it for free. And a lot of it you can get without commercials and everything else. You know, that's why us here at Jazz 90.1, we try to be unique in that we're one of the very few jazz stations around that still offer jazz 24/7. You know, but so many of the other stations out there are just the same old, same old, same old. So that, just like the rest of the folks, you know, Gert's there saying that he's a member. That's what keeps us going. You know, and granted, we have to come, you know, and I'm not trying to harp on it too much, but, you know, we come each year twice a year to ask you for help. But that's what keeps a unique radio station like this still going and for you to enjoy, and programs like ours.
Yep. Some pretty amazing stuff. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Oh, here's a great story, and I say that with only the slightest hint of sarcasm. My daughter the other night, I was eating, and I just, you know, one of those things where you turn your head because you're talking. Mm-hmm. I missed my mouth. Amelia said, your mouth is the thing with the teeth and where the sarcasm comes from.
Nice.
See what a college education will do?
Exactly. Facebook revealed on Tuesday that it has added free downloads of anti-malware software to its abuse detection and prevention systems for users with infected devices. The service is provided with the help of security software makers F-Secure and Trend Micro. Facebook will recommend one of them based on the type of malware it detects. Here's how it works. Infected users will see a pop-up notification with one of the suggested products when they sign on to Facebook. If you click download, the app will install itself and run. You'll receive the results of the scan as a notification in Facebook. When it's finished, the software will uninstall itself. Since you don't get to keep the software, this isn't a substitute for keeping your own computer clean and secure, but it does provide a backup option on the chance that you do get attacked. A Facebook spokesrobot confirmed that this works only in Windows desktops for now. The company uses a variety of signals to detect a malware infection, with the most obvious being any spam that your account posts. Facebook says you're welcome to decline the download and continue using its service, although it did note that you might see the notification again if you skip. It's nice to see Facebook offering free security tools to its users, as it should cut down on the number of dodgy links we get sent from friends whose computers have been compromised. The company says it plans to offer additional software options in the future, so you can look forward to more of these partnerships. Facebook is offering automatic downloads and installs of software. What could possibly go wrong? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
What's interesting is I kind of liken that to Google scanning for malicious websites when you try to click on a search. They know so many people use Google for search and so many people use Facebook. It's an obvious vector to help stop the bad guys.
Except if we start getting used to installing software through Facebook, what a great way to install malware off of any one of the millions of Facebook ads.
Yep, and then a lot of them come from there already. Do you want to install? Click. Oh, yeah, sure. Just let me go by.
And let me take this opportunity for those of you who are listening. I do not ever take any of those, you know, what's your Batman name? Your first initial, your birthday, your birth year. Most of those people are scams to get some of your personal information. If you tell me your Batman name, then what you have told me is your birth month, day, and year. That's one of the things people need to steal your identity. Don't take those tests, and don't bother passing them on to me, because I'm definitely not taking them either.
Yep. And a lot of times you'll get email that comes from people you know. We always talked about don't click on links from people you don't know. People you know can be infected and send you a link.
Mm-hmm.
And the bad guys can grab random names from address books and send you a link. I get bad emails from my sister all the time, and she doesn't even use a computer that much.
Well, that's why I've always said, if you have to hesitate even for a second about opening an email,
well, that's the problem. They don't hesitate. Oh, look, my sister sent me an email. I better click on that because it says, check this out, and it's a link. No.
Mm-mm.
Yep.
I actually, sadly, a friend of mine had passed away. And I kept getting email from him. Somebody had his address and stuff was coming in, you know. First, he never in his life said, dude, check this out.
Yeah.
Never once. So I knew that wasn't him to begin with. And secondly, I knew it wasn't him because he had passed.
Yeah.
Pretty sure, unless we're in a Twilight Zone episode, that email is not from him.
Oh, I know that feeling.
But of course, now I can't. I don't have anybody to call and say, I think somebody's got your address. You may want to write to your other friends.
Mm-hmm.
But it happens. People can. It is very easy to spoof an email address. Very easy. No, I'm not going to tell you how. But it is very, very easy. And consequently, all they need is somebody's email address. Most of the malware that's out there today is there for that specific purpose. They will grab your address book and send it to the bad guys so they have a list that they can either use or sell email addresses.
That's what Steve and I were talking about last week.
All the CCs that you leave in the message when you say
for
me too.
For God's sake, this is why there's a BCC.
Yep. Even though we don't know what carbon copy is anymore.
Yeah.
If you put it in the BCC line, no one else sees all those addresses.
But the thing we were talking about last week, very few viruses are going around. Because viruses don't make these guys any money.
Right.
Whereas if one of these guys create a small little script that just goes out there and, like you said, goes on your computer and steals your email address book.
We still talk about viruses mainly because it's a handy shortcut.
It's the word everybody knows.
Right, right. But we don't necessarily, whether it's a virus or a Trojan or whatever.
Spyware or whatever.
Who cares? Yep. The fact is, it's a bad thing. And, and that's what we're really talking about. But yeah, we just... Stop. I don't. And a personal plea. I don't play games on Facebook. Stop sending me invites. Stop!
Well, because every game I do play, if I invite my friends, I'll get more in-game money.
If they play.
Right.
Don't bother. I'm not going to play. Right. There is no way you will get money from me.
Yep.
See, I do one, and I like Candy Crunch. I'm into that.
I'm getting somebody sending me, can you send me Candy Crunch? What is it, Lives or something?
Yes.
They're asking for something out of Candy Crunch.
I get
Crunch.
That all the time from Kathy.
I don't play Candy Crunch.
They don't care. They still want you to send Lives.
I don't play. I've had people ask me, can you please sign up for Candy Crunch and send me your Lives?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
It's like gold farming.
Right.
Well, no, that Candy Crunch, though, is addicting. I'll admit that, And between that one and Words with Friends, I like playing that. Because I love Scrabble. Used to play it for years. Lori was great at doing crossword puzzles and that. We used to play Scrabble. And, I mean, she'd do the New York Times in ink.
Yeah. Yeah, I would do New York Times through Thursday in ink. But Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I generally did them in pencil.
Sunday, she'd sit there, because that's the hardest one.
Yep.
And sit there and really think about things.
Yeah.
She'd sort of lightly pen it in.
Yeah.
It's not there, but sort of there.
I used to play Words with Friends with my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
But I think whoever wrote the program is a friend of hers. Because I was always getting like X, Z, Y, Z, J, T, B as my letters. And I'm thinking, I can't play.
I used to get my butt
so
whipped
I throw
up.
Away three X's and I get three J's.
There you go.
Say, oh no.
Quite often four E's.
Yeah.
Four E's and a couple A's. Yeah. Then an L.
There was an episode of Castle a couple of weeks ago where Castle and Kate are playing Scrabble, and Castle is always wins. He's the guy that always wins whenever they play a game, right? And so Kate beat him, and he got upset, and then so they had to have a rematch, and so she tries to concede, and let him win, and said, "Well, no, we got to finish this. There's something better we could be doing right now." She keeps saying, "No, we got to play." So then she puts down her Q and her Z and her double triple word score and scores 400 points on one word.
Right.
and he falls over,
which you can do. Yeah. But I don't play too often. I don't play against Amelia. I'll play against other people because I get normal letters when I play. But whenever I play against Amelia, I've got P's and Z's and X's.
Yeah, I got two friends that I play with. We constantly got games going all the time, and it makes me, you know, it keeps you thinking, you know, and words and everything else, and that's what I like, the challenge of that.
I do crossword puzzles every day. Regular crossword puzzles.
I don't get into that. I used to love the jumbles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, my mother-in-law, we got her a book of the jumbles, and they got them in big print.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I used to get the little booklets, you know, the pocket-sized booklets.
Yep.
Well, we got her, and it's a regular booklet. It looks like, you know, coloring book size, you know, and big enough so she can see it and everything else. Yep. But she loves doing those. And same here. I love doing those. It was fun, you know, trying to figure the phrase for the day.
Yeah. My father-in-law does Sudokus.
Ooh.
I can't get into them. Yeah. I know how to solve them now. And so it's just, now it's just repetition and rote. And I just, it doesn't interest me anymore.
Well, it's just numbers going.
Doesn't interest me anymore.
Yeah. Have you been playing 2048?
Yes. Nope.
The latest craze.
Oh my God. Have you played Doctor Who 2048?
No.
Oh yeah. Doctor Who 2048. Yeah. The 2048 tile game is actually kind of fun, but there is a Doctor Who 2048 tile. You match the William Hartnells, and you get Patrick Troughton, and you match the two Troughtons, and you get, so it goes up the progression.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
Do we have to wait till Christmas to see a new episode?
Yes!
Darn it!
Yes, I know. Peter Capaldi, as they apparently pronounce it in England, Capaldi, is the new Doctor, and we're all waiting.
Is Falling, you know, not sure that it was on last year, Fallen Sky.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been like three seasons of that on TNT.
Is that still
I think playing? It's coming back soon, June something.
With Noah Wiley.
Yeah, they're doing commercials now. They're doing commercials now for the about the camp. Skeeters.
Yeah, because they were doing it. Yeah, they were going to evacuate that one camp.
June 22nd.
June 20. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, that's the one thing I love also.
And what was the other one? There's like three or four new sci-fi shows coming.
I love having on-demand. Because then that way I can
watch them all
I watch more on-demand because there's fewer... A one-hour show quite often is cut down to like 40, 45 minutes.
Right.
You lose a lot of the commercials.
I rarely watch anything live now. I have a DVR. So I DVR everything and I skip the commercials. I know I shouldn't even mention that on television because they hate that idea.
No.
But I do that. And so, you know, an hour-long show is a 40-minute show.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll watch the commercials if I haven't seen it yet. But if I know the commercial, and I just skip right past it.
Right.
I'm just going up and down to see what happens. I'm stuck.
You're missing all your sideways stuff.
I know. I just went up and down. I didn't do
sideways. I understand that. He's now, I apologize to everyone out there. Steve is now stuck playing Doctor Who 2048.
I saw it, Oh, I got a Peter Davidson.
Yeah.
I'm just randomly hitting keys to see if I can, my game's over.
Oh, boy.
But yeah, so, well, that's the thing. I spend more time, frankly, on Netflix and Hulu than I do on any of that other stuff.
Yeah.
All right, enough of this nonsense. We're gonna take a short hiatus, just a few minutes, to gather ourselves as we hurl headlong into the second hour of this show. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco with Dave Enright and Steve Ray, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with your calls, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. It's the longest-running computer show in the known universe on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side for a whole nother hour of this nonsense.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
One thing we should mention, we just had a caller saying that he's having a little trouble getting on the stream. If you go into the webpage and can't get on the fast one, you know, the high connection, try the lower one. It's only audio, folks.
And if that doesn't work, try the third one.
Yeah. So, you know, a couple of different options.
We're too popular.
Look, here's the thing, everybody. We are, as you may have heard, gotten a hint of at some point, we are a member-supported station.
Yep.
Which means it is your dollars that keep this station alive, and your dollars are only paying for so many connections to a data stream at a time.
Right.
We'd be happy to double that, triple it, quadruple it.
Oh, that'd be great.
We can't do it without your help. So
exactly. If
you want to wait for the next pledge drive to pledge more money, you can do that. But you can always pledge anytime you want online at jazz901.org, pledge securely.
And say it's for Soundbites.
And say it's for Soundbites.
And there's also the Ustream video channel where you can watch us as well as listen to us.
Right.
Still
as scintillating as that is.
Exactly. I was going to say that I still have a face for radio.
Or start it playing and then hide the video so
yes.
Also here's the audio.
That's scary.
Once I fix the problem with this connector, I don't know what the deal is. All right. Apple has enhanced its iWork suite of iCloud apps to include much improved collaboration, new document options, and more file storage. iWork includes the Pages Word Processor, Keynote Presentation Maker, and Numbers Spreadsheet Manager, and it is likely that supporting apps for iOS and OS X will become available in the near future. The new collaboration features allow for over 100 people to collaborate on a single file in either Pages, Keynote, or Numbers. Apple introduced collaboration with iWork for iCloud last year, and the feature matches Google Drive's ability to allow multiple people to work on a single file simultaneously. This 100 number is up from the previous limit of 50 simultaneous users. I believe that number is just a thumping of the chest, because how many people have 100 folks actually collaborating on a document? Apple has also improved file storage on iWork for iCloud, allowing individual documents to be a gigabyte in size and allowing for individual images sizes of up to 10 megabytes. The 1 gigabyte file size is vastly improved over the earlier 200 megabyte document limit. The trio of applications will also have the ability to create 2D and interactive charts with formatting improvements and make more color changes. Pages has also gained exporting to EPUB format, which I may be using. Improvements to tables and object layering. Numbers has added exporting to CSV, which allows easier integration with Microsoft Excel. And Keynote has gained the ability to show or hide slide numbers. Last month, iWork for iCloud gained an improved design and new sharing options. Even with these improvements, Apple still calls the software beta. But perhaps we will learn more about the future of iWork for iCloud at the upcoming Worldwide Developers Conference in early June. So do you collaborate with people on iWork? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
It's a trick they learned from Google. As long as you call it beta, people can't complain about bugs.
That's
what do you
right.
expect? It's beta.
That's right.
But it's really, really amazing what they're doing with a web app. You know, full-featured word processing, columns and fonts, and it kind of kills Google Docs in capabilities.
No, it doesn't.
Well,
how does it?
Well,
they're all fairly much the same.
Yeah.
No matter which one you're talking about, they all essentially do the same stuff. Google still can be shared with 50 people to edit it simultaneously, but you can share it with 200 people. 200 people can be viewing it and commenting on it, but not editing.
Yep.
All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Karen from Brockport, New York. Welcome, Karen. What's up?
Oh, hi. I would like to get a recommendation for a printer that's going to last more than a few months.
Well, generally, there's two classes of printers, ink and laser. Mm-hmm. And in each class, there are cheap ones and there are good ones. What we have seen is that there's a big problem with too cheap. You buy a $50 inkjet printer, it breaks in 2 months, you throw it away and buy a new one. If you spend $150, you get a few years out of it. And they're a little better quality that way. The big issue with ink and laser is the cost of consumables. With a laser printer, your per print cost is much lower. And with the inkjet printer, you get better color reproduction. So if you're printing a lot of photos, you want an inkjet printer. If you're printing just regular web pages and email, you want a laser printer. So a lot of people will end up with one of each to save on the consumable costs. All of the brands come in cheap and good models, and that's sort of the trick, is to know how cheap is too cheap.
Yeah. Well, last summer, not quite a year ago, I bought an intermediate price Epson inkjet printer scanner, and it's already not working right. You know, skipping lines and streaking and that kind of stuff.
Well, that may just need the heads cleaned.
Well, I've done the head cleaning and changing.
How often do you use this printer?
Recommended.
Mm-hmm.
How often do you use this printer?
Not very often. That's probably part of the problem.
That's the problem. Yeah, liquid ink printers, you have to use it fairly regularly, you know, every day or so, so that the ink doesn't clog up in the heads. You will probably be better off with a laser printer, which doesn't have that problem.
Okay.
And then you can go up to a color. So laser, you know, laser printers usually start in the $150 range for black and white laser. Color lasers are now under $300, which is amazing. I remember the first color laser I was playing with was $50,000, and that was cheap at the time. A color laser gives you the best of both worlds. You have the low cost of laser, and also the ability to print in color when you need it.
Right.
So with an inkjet printer, if you don't use it very often, the heads can clog and the ink can dry up. If you use it too much, then you run out of ink too fast and you spend too much money in ink. So that's kind of the trick with inkjet printers. They use the razor analogy, where the printer itself is relatively cheap, and then the company makes up all the money in the ink that they buy. Somebody worked out the cost of ink, because normally those tanks are, you know, a milliliter or 2 milliliters. Generally, that works out to $3,000 or $4,000 a gallon. And we complain about gasoline expense.
Right.
So with a laser printer, your $100 cartridge is going to last 4,000 or 5,000 pages. So you're looking at, you know, 10 cents a page. With inkjet printers, you're usually looking at $1 a page for the cost of the ink. But that being said, Epson is a very good brand, especially for people that do color photos. It's one of the brands that we sell quite a bit. And you just, you have to know that you have to keep using it enough to keep the ink flowing.
Okay.
Okie doke.
I'll do some more research on that. Thank you. And I'll throw in, I'm also a member of the station.
That's what we like to hear. Thanks, Karen.
All right, thank you.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of the inkjet printers will have 6 separate cartridges in them, so it can mix the ink better. Mm-hmm. In fact, the really cheap printers will have 2 cartridges, one black and one multicolor. And so the multicolor, cyan, magenta, and yellow. So if you run out of one color, you have to throw away the other two.
They love that.
So the better way to go is a slightly more expensive printer that has 4 separate cartridges, CMYK. But if you do color photos, then adding that 6 color printer, you get better better photographic out of it, because it can mix that light cyan and light magenta together. In fact, Epson makes one that has 8 color tanks, including 4 blacks. There's black, light black, light black, and what was the fourth one? I forget what the fourth one was, but it had 4 different blacks in it. And that was marketed to black and white photographers. So it could really mix the grays and get a really good gray out of it.
Nice. What is it?
56 shades of gray?
Yeah.
Let's move on. Our next caller is Mike from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's up?
Not too much. I just have an opinion question here. I've got an old iMac sitting around the house, and just, you know, the all-in-one, and I'm really not doing anything with it. Is it worth trying to pass on to somebody else or resell it or recycle it? Or
well, depends on what you want to do with it and how old it is.
Well, it's got the OS 10, but not the latest version.
Yeah, you can upgrade it possibly to a later system version, but they're always good for word processing. Whatever games that it came with. The problem with an older computer is that you have to get older stuff on it. Some people just need something to learn on, to play on.
If you're really looking to use it, if it's an Intel iMac, and it would be if it's OS 10, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
You can always
No. The first OS 10s worked on the Power PCs.
Oh, all right. Well, you can still get Linux for it if you wanted to play with Linux. There's several versions of Linux. Is it an iMac G5?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Is it a CRT or a flat screen LCD?
CRT.
So that's a G3. Yeah, they're going for about $20 on eBay.
Okay, well, that's what I was wondering.
But if it still works, you can still type on it.
So I forgot the administrator's password.
Yeah. But if you really wanted it to be at least semi-useful and you're interested in playing around with Linux, there's a version called Mint PPC at mintppc.org that will work on all the older iMacs and any of the Macs that had PowerPC.
Yeah, G3, G4, G5.
Yeah. If you really wanted to play with that, I don't know what else might work. There are, might be some other operating systems, but I know that Linux will work. And once you get it set up, it's something to play with. It's a graphical user interface, blah blah blah. You can see a lot about it on mintppc.org.
Well, I really haven't come near it lately, so I was just wondering if it was worth passing on, and how would I clean stuff off so that I could put it on eBay or Craigslist or have somebody get some use out of it.
Yeah, you boot from
just putting it into the scrap heap.
Yep. You boot from your system disk that it came with, and then you can erase the hard drive.
Okay. I don't have a disk. I got to use.
Well, they still should have given you a disk. Becomes much harder because now you have to find a disk to boot from and erase the data.
Mm. Or you can install Mint PPC, which will erase the rest of the hard drive.
Yeah.
And then you can do whatever else you want with it. Mint PPC is free. You can just download it, burn a disk, and then install it. Even if you never intend to use it, that will clear off the hard drive.
And how's that spelled?
Mint, as in mint julep.
Okay.
PPC for powerpc.org.
All right. That's worth looking into.
There you go.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yipper. Yeah, those of us who are fans of Linux know that you can put it on dang near anything there is. But even without that, it's a good product for somebody who's in Mike's situation.
There's also,
you've got an old machine. You don't have the disk anymore. You can't really erase it easily, blah, 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 mm-hmm. blah, blah. Install Linux on it, and then that clears out everything else from the hard drive.
Yep. There's also Penguin PPC and Debian PPC.
Debian works fine. So, yeah, they're all there. Mint packages things a little more easily for the beginner, which is often a nice thing, but they all work. Shall we take another news item, or you want to take a break? Let's take the break. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great, and as you heard, truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we have Larry from Penfield, New York on the line. Welcome, Larry. What's up?
Good morning, guys. Two, 3 years ago when I got a new laptop, I think I may have done some incorrect allocation of where I put things. Right now, I've basically got everything on the C drive, which leaves basically nothing on the D drive. And if that's wrong, is there some way to recover from that gracefully, or is that a bear to do?
Well, a couple of questions. Are these actually two separate drives or just two partitions on the same drive?
Probably two partitions on the same drive.
All right.
Yeah, my big thing is don't partition your drive, then you don't have to worry about one of them filling up.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. The big reason that people use multiple drives is that if something goes wrong with one drive, the other drive still has your data on it. But when it's just partitions on the same drive, if something goes wrong with that drive, you lose
your
the
host.
Other partition as well.
Yeah.
So you can do one of two things. You can repartition your system so that it's all just one big C drive, or you can move your documents folder over to the D drive. And then doing that means that your C drive is now all your regular stuff, you know, the Windows operating system and applications, and then all your data are over on D. Again, don't think of them as two separate drives, because you still are only on one drive, but at least now you're still using that D drive. Have you filled your C?
No, it's not full, but it's
getting close.
One of the things also to check on is that many drives will come with a tiny D partition, which is your recovery partition. And that's got your operating system recovery files
right.
on it. And you shouldn't use that for data at all.
Yeah, you usually say that, too.
I don't believe that I did any partitioning.
The company, when you bought it, would have done that automatically.
And
they create that partition, put up all your files. And back in the day, I don't see it as happening as much. They used to give you a utility that you could make your own CDs, so in case your system crashed, you could then recover. It'd have all the drivers on there, the OS, and you would tuck those away.
Right, and some companies partition the drive before you get the computer with the intent that your C drive is Windows and apps and your D drive is your documents. But people get the false impression that's two drives and think they're protected because they have two drives. It's all one drive. Just split up into two, you know, logical pieces, not two physical pieces.
All right. Well, what's listed on D right now is a recycle bin, a backup application, and system volume information. That's all that's on there.
How big is that drive?
One second.
That doesn't sound like it's a recovery drive, because it would have more stuff on it than that.
It says 327 gigs.
That's interesting. So it sounds like that company made your C drive for apps and left the D drive for documents, but didn't create the documents folder on the D drive, which is silly. So you can repartition it to one big hard drive, or you can move your documents to that D drive.
Okay. Does it matter which way I go on it?
No.
It'd be easier to just move my documents.
Yep. Either one would work. Steve's going to put up a link to a couple of websites that'll talk about moving your documents folder.
The trick is to automatically save my documents on D, so you don't have to remember to do it every time.
Right. And you can set that in your individual
application
programs. Like if you're using Microsoft Office, you can set where the My Documents folder is. You can also go into the registry, although I do not recommend that, and change the location of the My Documents folder.
I want to mess with that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. There are also utilities that will do that for you.
You can make that a library in Windows 7 or later.
Yeah, but the easiest thing to do is to set your applications, particularly if what you mostly use is one suite like Microsoft Office, go into the setup for that and the properties for that. And one of the things is, where do I save documents? You create a folder on your D drive. You say, I want to save all my documents there. Then you can also copy the move the documents from the C drive to the D drive, and you're done. It's now all going to go on the D drive. And what that does is free up some space on your C drive, although it doesn't sound like you really need it, but it also lets you start using that D drive. Like we said, the other thing is to use something like Partition Magic to make the D drive partition very small. Don't get rid of it entirely, just in case there is some backup information on there. How big did you say it was?
300 gigs. How big is your whole hard drive? 300
gigs or 300 megs?
Well, it says use space 111 megs, free space 327 gigs.
So that's a huge, huge partition. How big is the whole hard drive?
Well, let me see what the C drive is.
Maybe they split it twice. So I remember some computers used to do that because they formatted it in FAT32, which had a, 340 gig limit or whatever that limit was. Yeah. So they had to make multiple drives instead of making NTFS.
Well, C is 116 gigs.
Well, that's just stupid.
Yeah.
Why would they have created such a tiny C drive?
Exactly right. That's the image they created 15 years ago for Windows XP.
With a 127 gig limit.
Yep. Right. They only wanted the operating system on that small partition, all your other programs.
But they didn't do anything to set all that up for him.
Right. No.
Right. Right. So what you really want to do is reset your Windows folder, your documents folder, so that it goes over to the D drive, and then actually physically move your documents folder there. And from then on, you'll have plenty of room for your documents. You might want to move your pictures folder as well.
Yep.
Maybe your music folder.
What I would suggest is, before you do any of this, get an external hard drive.
That's what I was just going to say.
And back everything up. So you want a second copy on a completely separate drive.
Yep.
That way, in case you screw something up, you've still got everything.
Well, plus, if that hard, like we were saying, if that hard drive crashes, he's toast.
Well, having a backup somewhere off the machine is important anyway. Right.
Yeah, I've got a standalone backup drive, so I can do that.
Perfect. Yep.
So now when you start putting your files on the D drive, make sure your backup drive also includes backing up D, not just C.
Yeah, just back up all of D.
Yeah.
Right.
You don't have to worry about C anymore.
Right.
Okay, well, another question while I have you guys here. I'm trying to import my Yahoo contacts into another account for my wife. And when I export the file out to save it, and then when I go to import it into her account, it looks like it's only taking about 25% of it for some reason.
Is this another Yahoo account?
Yes.
It's very possible that one of your contacts is damaged in some way. And it's going up to the damage point and then stopping because it doesn't know what to do next. So one thing you might want to do is take a look at what's going into your wife's account. If it's all alphabetical, see what the last one in... Did you get any kind of error message?
No.
See what the last good one was and then see what the next one is on your machine. See if you see something funky with it. You might have to make a couple of changes. Maybe there's some extra commas, some weird stuff, a comma where there should be a period, that sort of fare. Fix that up, then re-export and re-import again. See if that fixes it.
Okay, sounds easy enough.
There you go.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you. Good luck.
Yeah, Yahoo just changed recently their email interface, and now it looks different. And we started getting a lot of calls at the office. My computer's broken.
Yahoo's broken. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. My computer's broken. Can you fix it? Well, it's not your computer. Yahoo changed the way they look at things. Sometimes you can go back to the old way in the preferences, but sometimes you can't. And that's very annoying for a lot of people. It's different from what they looked at.
on Linux, you can have any one of a million different interfaces.
Yep.
And people are always, you can make it look exactly like a Windows box. You can make it look exactly like a Mac. Or, of course, you can make it look like anything you want. And people are always saying, why would you want it to look like Windows or a Mac? Because if you're used to the way that looks and works, why not use it?
Yep.
I'm not a snob about that. Go for it. Knock yourself out. Whatever works. Everything else is just kind of silly.
We've had a lot of customers in the last couple of months switching from Windows XP up to a new Mac with XP dying, support for XP dying. And one of the big things that we have to show them is that things are kind of backwards on the Mac. Because when Microsoft copied the Mac, they did everything backwards, hoping Apple wouldn't sue them. Apple sued them anyway. So on Windows, my computer's on the left, and on the Mac, it's on the right.
Right.
And on Windows, your close button's on the right, and on the Mac, it's on the left. So it's all the same stuff. It's just in a slightly different place.
Which means you can't find it, and it's not there.
Yeah, we say it's like getting a new car for the first couple of weeks.
Yep.
You don't know where the radio buttons are. You don't know what side the gas fill is on. You don't know how to you know, turn your air conditioning on. So, but after a couple of weeks, you figure it out.
And then you forget that you didn't know how.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people are always saying, I can't learn this. And I said, did you suddenly become stupid? Because you learned it the first time.
Yeah.
You learned Windows, you can learn a Mac. You learned a Mac, you can learn Linux. You may not want to. You may be too lazy to. But you're not too stupid to, because you learned one once. I have trouble with that. All right, to the news. They're spitting white rage in Cupertino these days. Why? Because Google has been declared the most valuable brand in the world, which means Apple is no longer that. Research company Millward Brown has decided that this is true. And when a research company decides, you can't really argue. Indeed, because you can't see the research. Indeed, looking at the research results, which you can see, the evidence is quite painful. Apple's brand value has diminished by 20% to a mere $148 billion. Meanwhile, Google's has soared by a fulsome 40% to $159 billion. Millward Brown's Global Brand Z Director Peter Walsh explains that Google's soaring presence to gain more of our mind space, brands such as Google are making ambitious plays across existing category boundaries. Yes, Google has self-driving cars, balloons, and quite frightening glasses. Apple has, well, phones and tablets and PCs. We've been there, and we've done those. Technology as a whole continues to perform very well, but maintaining its third place is IBM, and fourth was Microsoft. AT&T is eighth, two places above Amazon, and tenth, which still has to smoke its way past Marlboro at nine. Now, perhaps the most surprising presence was Chinese web portal Tencent at number 14. Facebook was 21st, Samsung 29th. You might be wondering how Millward Brown calculates these various positions. It uses a tool called Optimore. Optimore. This, of course, is a proprietary tool whose ingredients are closely guarded. The data are allegedly culled from 150,000 interviews with consumers from around the world. The company revealed its top 100 most valuable global brands report that the value of the world's most important brands has increased by 12%. Millward Brown believes that what is unique about its approach is the recognition that in all markets, a small number of consumers account for a large proportion of sales. Loyal consumers are more valuable to a brand than occasional users, a crucial factor when analyzing brand value. So, Google or Apple? Or who cares? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
And when stock prices fluctuate, everything will change again.
Well, I'm sure it's already changed from when I wrote this.
Yep.
Heck yeah.
This always amuses me. We're the number one company in the world. Sure, Tuesday. But it's exactly what you say. You know, it changes. It's different every day.
Mm-hmm. Changes faster than the weather.
Right. What makes a brand valuable is brand recognition. And there are very few people in the world who don't recognize the word, the name Apple and the name Google. And the name Microsoft and Samsung and all of the others I mentioned. So, except maybe Tencent. And so, for most people, you know, it's who you trust. Do you want to give all of your information to Apple? Do you want to give all of your information to Microsoft? Do you want to give all of your information to Google? It's all six of one, half a dozen of the other. And just move on. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour. Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. A former iPhone user sued Apple, claiming the company's messaging system interfered with delivery of text after she switched to an Android-based smartphone. The benefits of iMessage include bypassing a wireless carrier's text messaging charges, enabling the ability to tell when a message is read or delivered and to send a message simultaneously to all of one's iOS and Mac devices. However, Apple's system has proved problematic, and that in order to work properly, it needs to have an accurate knowledge of which phone numbers are actually associated with iPhones, and for those who leave, what was once a series of added features turns into a headache. While it isn't going into details on when or how the upcoming iOS release will improve things, Apple is certainly hoping to have a solution once that new iOS release is in place. Until then, users can avoid problems if they turn off iMessage on their iPhone and uncheck the phone numbers from any other Apple devices on which they are using iMessage before switching to a new non-Apple device. However, this requires some planning and still may not be a guarantee of a smooth transition to the new phone. Apple's iMessage retains text messages sent from other users of Apple devices and won't deliver them to her Samsung phone running on Google's Android operating system, Adrienne Moore said in the complaint filed last Friday in San Jose, California. According to the complaint, people who replace their Apple devices with non-Apple wireless phones and tablets are penalized and unable to obtain the full benefits of their wireless service contracts. She said, Google, meanwhile, is pushing for a bigger piece of the wireless phone market with new features and updates to attract more users. The efforts helped Google claim more than 75% of the smartphone industry at the end of last year, according to Gartner. The text messaging lawsuit, which seeks class action status and undetermined damages, claims Apple failed to disclose that switching to a device other than one running on Apple's iOS operating system could result in the interference. The suit is based on contractual interference and unfair competition laws. A recent server glitch made the problem worse, rendering moot one of Apple's key methods for trying to remedy the situation. While it isn't going into details on when or how the upcoming iOS release will improve things, Apple is, as I said earlier, hoping to have a solution once that new iOS release happens. So, do you iMessage? If so, are you thinking about switching to an Android phone? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. So, iMessage doesn't actually text?
It can when it texts to a non-Apple device, and then it goes through the cell service. When you're going Apple to Apple, it goes through the internet, bypassing cellular charges and texting charges.
Of which people generally now have unlimited texting,
yeah,
but pay for data. So how do I win?
You're back. You're grandfathered into unlimited data.
Yeah.
Or you have Wi-Fi. But yeah. No. So when I first started reading about this mess, my thought was, well, why didn't you turn all that off before you stopped using the phone?
Because who would have to? If I switched from one iPhone to another, I never have to turn any of that off. if I switch from an Android phone to an Apple phone, I never have to turn any of that off. Before iMessage, if I switch from an iPhone to an Android phone, I never had to turn any of that off. Everything just moved for me. Yeah. It's only now that there's iMessage that there's a change that nobody told us about.
Yeah. And well, they probably didn't know there would be a problem.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
Well, they probably didn't think of it. I'm sure that somewhere somebody said, oh, here's a cool feature. We'll do all this, this, this. If somebody switched to an Android phone, that would cause an issue. But who would do that? How stupid is that?
Why would you switch?
Most folks.
Well, some folks. And that's, you know, we joke a lot about whether Android or Google or Apple or whoever, whatever. And now Firefox has a phone and everybody's got a phone. But you know what? They all pretty much do the same stuff. It's just whatever you're happy with. There are people who are actually happy with BlackBerry. God bless each and every one of them.
Steve Gibson finally switched from a BlackBerry to an iPhone.
Yeah, I was going to say, do very many folks use BlackBerry anymore?
Yes, some. The big thing about BlackBerry was that you could set up your own BES server, BlackBerry Enterprise Server. And if you did that and pointed your phone at your BES server, your messages never really hit the internet. So, for example, if you're the president of the United States, you have two choices. You can use the BES server that belongs to BlackBerry, which, by the way, is in Canada, or the White House sets up their own BES server, and they can secure all those messages any way they want. So for a company that worries about that kind of security and then encrypting the messages and yada, yada, mm-hmm. yada,
yeah.
then yes, having a BlackBerry with your own BES server makes an awful lot of sense.
And BlackBerry was huge in business and government, and there's
for
a lot of holdovers.
For that very reason.
Yeah.
But two problems, well, several problems with that. First, now you've got to have a BES administrator. That's a person you have to hire.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a fairly beefy server to run all that stuff. And you've got to have tech support for BlackBerry, which is not likely to be a common skill set of the tech people you would hire. So now you got to train them all.
Yep.
So it's a whole... and a lot of people say, well, if I just use a regular phone with regular text messaging, then I don't have to do any of that stuff. And life is better.
Right.
So they move to that, but now they lose that security. And I get it. And that's, you know, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
it is. But the truth is that there are trade-offs. No matter where you go, whatever you do, there are trade-offs.
And nobody wins.
Yeah.
What is a compromise? Is someone where everyone walks away unhappy?
Yeah, right. The art of compromise. Yep.
Hmm.
It's the concept behind the BlackBerry, brilliant. Put up your own server, do your own messaging,
yeah.
Never have to worry about it. But in terms of actual use, you've got a lot of things you got to worry about and a lot of issues you have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's and that's one of the reasons that BlackBerry is losing market share. Nobody wants to make that additional investment. For most companies, it mostly doesn't matter.
Yeah, I see.
You know, they're not going to need it. For those few companies who do, that's not enough to sustain. That's not a growing market, and it's not enough to sustain
right.
a worldwide
that you can't,
company.
You can't just cost justify it.
Right, exactly. So that's one of the reasons that... BlackBerry's in trouble. That's why the BBM, the BlackBerry Messenger,
mm-hmm.
They put out an app for Android and iOS so that you could use the BlackBerry messaging system on those devices.
Through the internet, like iMessage, but across platform.
But again, now you're either going through, you're sending all your messages
through Canada
to servers in Canada, or you're, again, buying a machine, buying at least one technician, and building your own BES server. Although that's redundant. The S in BES is server. So, but your own BlackBerry Enterprise server. But so it becomes
an ROI.
It's a server of servers. it becomes an ROI, a return on investment. You know, how much money are you going to spend and how much benefit are you going to get out of that money? And for some people, security is a very high benefit. But for a lot of people, it's easier to say, don't discuss company business over text messaging. I mean, text messaging for let's go to lunch or where are you or let's meet at 1 o'clock, not an information-rich environment there. So if you use it for the right stuff, it doesn't matter if it's secure or not. But if you wanted to actually say, you know, use the Alpha Z chip in our brand new laser instead of the Alpha Y chip, that might be something that a competitor would want to know. You just don't discuss those over text messages.
Well, even now we're seeing TV commercials about don't post things on Facebook and Instagram. Don't text over the internet. That, you know, let's go to lunch because now I know your house is empty.
Well, that's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. All right, that music tells me that it's done. It's done for another week. This show is over. I want to thank everyone who called in. I want to apologize to all those to whom we did not get. You need to call earlier. Calling like 30 seconds before the end of the show isn't really going to get you on. But we want to thank you all for listening. Now, don't go away, because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow. He's begged me to leave my cane behind so he can beat George if he needs to, and I can't do that. But we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. We are Soundbites, and we are right here proudly on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in Second Life tomorrow and right here next week.